All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Tuesday on The Usual Suspects, and I am glad to say, once again, the band is back together. Nicholas back in tow in the studio. We appreciate him, Barry, from his humble abode, and me, myself, and I, as we get this party started. Fellas, what's going on?
Reunited, and it feels so good.
What's up, people? How you guys doing?
Well, it doesn't sound too good, but yeah, holy cow.
Bitch, that sounded amazing.
You hit the high note there on bitch, on bitch. You hit the high note there.
If I was gonna be an R&B singer, that would be my like go-to move. I would be like, say, bitch, what's up?
Man.
Welcome back, Nicholas. Happy to have you back, buddy.
Hello, people. How you guys doing? How did the show go yesterday? I listened for, I think, a little bit in the first hour and a little bit in the third hour. I felt like it was a fun show. How you guys doing?
We had a good time.
Good. We're doing good, man. Yeah, we had a good time. We missed you. No, it isn't. And I sent you props out, told Barry the show. I listened to you guys while stuck waiting for pizza Friday night. I thought that was great. I texted you as well to say good job. That was entertaining.
Good, good. I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad you liked it. And I remember mentioning, you know, one of the interviews that I would be looking forward to with Barry on Barry's podcast on YouTube, Barry is Funny, would be the one he does with Lisa Hernandez. Is there anything we can reveal in that regard?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, well,
I feel like the freaking,
he said she's nervous.
Like Cadbury. Well, I don't think Barry knows either now, but I feel like for the last 2 weeks I've been like that Cadbury egg on that commercial where you just sit there and go, bark, 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 and then you can't let it out, and then finally it's let out for you, and so to speak. But yeah, Barry, your podcast may be up in the air a little bit. She's gonna have to get approval from someone other than me now.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on. Is this good news though? I mean, are we talking?
It is absolutely like fantastic, wonderful news for my wife, and the news came out officially today that Lisa Hernandez, only on the air, of course, my wife will be joining Channel 2 alongside Owen Conflente as the morning anchor on Channel 2.
Oh, snap! See. Well, congratulations to Lisa and to you as well, because I know that's always a worry, right? Like in this business when you're looking for the next gig. So congrats to you guys. I'm very happy for her. Look, if she can't do my podcast because of that, I'll take it. I am more than
no,
happy.
No,
I mean, like, now, here's the deal. Isaiah Carey said he'd do it. So she's not, I mean, come on. She could write? Like, she could still.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful that that's the case. But, you know, because there was obviously, and you guys know more than anybody else, but there was stuff that we had to get through along the way. So we just want to be careful about it. But, yeah, I mean, look, we weren't sure what was going to happen next. And she wasn't sure, honestly, that she was going to stay in the business. And it just, you know, when people say God is good, man, all I'm telling you is, It just came out of nowhere, and it was fantastic, and she deserves it, and she's going to where, you know, a place she really wanted to be at.
Tell her I said, welcome to the Channel 2 family.
I will. That's right. Well. Yeah.
Yeah, you forget someone else you know is on Channel 2. Right. You got to show love. Channel 2's from morning to night.
Well, the funny thing,
I've always respected Channel
2
because I've had instructors that work there, so I totally respect that platform.
I got a lot of friends that work there, and the funny thing is Barry was on to this and didn't realize he was on to this a few weeks ago, because we were talking about something. We were a couple different things. And he's like, man, you watch a lot of Channel 2, don't you? You brought up Channel 2 a couple times on this. And I was like, nah, I'm just, just checking out things on the news. But, yeah, it was all kind of in the mix. And, I told Nick kiddingly, sorry to disappoint you, bro, but we're staying in Houston. But, the thing is it's just when you have a family, man. It's different.
I mean,
yeah.
Dang it. Joel staying on the show, unfortunately. I tried to get rid of Barry. That didn't work. Now I'm trying to get rid of Joel, and that's not working.
Yeah, well. And you know what the funny thing was? It was crazy because all of a sudden, like, I went for a run last night. I come in, and she's all in a frantic mess around the house. I go, what's going on? She's like, well, I got to fill out they need me to do a survey. And then they need a picture, and they can't use any of my headshots because – channel the property of channel something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, we took that family picture, just have them cut me and Taylor out. It's a great picture of you, and they can't even tell you were pregnant at the time. She's like, oh, well, wait a minute. And then she comes back, she goes, hey, you okay with the fact that they want to use the entire picture? I go, the whole family? She goes, yeah, they're going to use that on the press release. I was like, I mean, if you are, I don't know that it helps you. And then I thought about it, and AJ has always said that the only reason why I'm employed at the station is because I have a famous wife. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, AJ will be happy about that. Just use that then.
Now, I do want to point out, this is far be it from me, but why didn't they crop you out and just leave her and the baby? Because I'm looking at the picture.
Uh-huh. And oh boy! So we're gonna go that route. Mm.
Okay. It's, I mean, what did you? How did you trick this woman, Joel? I'm just messing with you. I'm just messing with you, bro. I am so excited for her. I know that's a huge burden off of you guys, and it's a cool thing, dude. When you in this business, you know this. Both of you know this, but in this business, it can be very difficult to bounce back when something happens, whether you walk away on your own or you're asked to walk away. This is not an easy business from job to job. So I got to imagine it's a huge relief off of her and you. And it's cool that she's on a really cool station, and everything that I've heard and seen or whatever that Uncle Flinty is a cool dude too. So she's probably going to get along great with him.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the other things, was that the people that used to work on my TV crew with the Rockets a long time back, they play golf with Owen, and they kept saying, you got to play golf with this guy. You guys would really get along, blah, 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 blah. And you know, it just never happened. And I always said to Lisa, I said, of all the people that I watch locally on TV, I think he's very polished. He really gets it. He's one of the best in the market. And so now for them to be working together, I think it's going to be a good fit. It's a good team. And maybe we'll even get him on the show, because I think he's a sports – I know he's a sports fan, and he's a golfer, and so that's cool. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a good pairing. It's exactly where I wanted her to be all along. And you're right. It was a huge burden for us because, look, I love this, and I love you guys, and I love doing this show. And we were contemplating things like, she loves the fact that I'm happy doing this, so much so that she's like, she contemplated like literally not going back into the business, and just because we love Houston and we want to stay in Houston. And I'm like, look, you go from those stresses to be able to take that big sigh of relief and going, hey, we are staying where I wanted to stay all along. That's huge. So,
man, well, congrats.
Well, good. Good.
Yeah, thank you. Because
that's always
so
a big decision
cool.
When you have to, when you got kids and you want to consider moving out of the city, you know?
And I think the cool thing was is that, there were a lot of big cities that were interested in her and were reaching out. And so that made her feel good. But, I think, again, the fact that you don't have to weigh a decision like that, and, you stay where your heart is and where you want to be, and that's the most important thing. So, yes, thank you. Huge sigh of relief, and now you're stuck with me.
Oh, damn it. Well, I guess that's great. Great news. Yeah.
Super, right? Okay. I can feel the love right through the damn headset. Well, we're right back where we need to be.
Excuse me. Just for you, I watched that dumb Michael Jordan documentary.
Why was it dumb? Nick, I take
dumb.
It you watched.
Dumb? Why was it dumb, bro?
Yeah, why
I'm
was
just
it
kidding.
Dumb?
I just did that for him. I know. Look, I got the first. I didn't get to the second one, but I did get episode one, and I do have several thoughts about that.
Good. That's good. Nick, you watched it?
And I'm sure Nick
yeah.
does, too.
Yeah, yeah. I've got plenty of thoughts. We can definitely discuss. If you guys want to. I don't know if you guys did already. It might be
an old time. No, we tried, and he didn't watch it. And if it was me and the Tiger King, I would have gotten absolutely lambasted for days. And then if I would have come back and said, only watch the first episode, which, by the way, when I watched the Tiger King, I watched, the first three or four, and Barry killed me. So we come back, and we're going to be okay with the fact that Barry watched episode one. Yay!
You
okay?
You good over there, Puddin? Are you still? Are you... It's all right, Puddin. That's gonna be okay. We're here. We're gonna talk about it as a family.
There you go. So we can talk about it as a family now that all three of us are present and accounted for. So that's excellent. And of course, we always want you guys to join in as well. So there's lots to be discussed today. 713-780-3776. That's our HRP listener line. You can call that number. You can text that number. You can hit us on Twitter, where it is at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, and at Barry is funny. As we just get it started here on The Usual Suspects. So join us, won't you? We're going to be here for the next 3 hours. Hopefully, so will you. Right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5 is more talk and less commercials, which means more sports talk for you.
That's awesome.
That's just sick.
However, it does mean less pee time for the hosts.
I can't hold it in anymore.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine with this. ESPN 97.5.
There's a little pee coming out of me right now.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go! Second segment of the show as we roll through a Tuesday on The Usual Suspects. We already have Nicholas doing a little extra work this week. And coming up with some possibly really, really good themes for not only this week, but the next couple weeks for a Way Back Wednesday. So that is on the docket as well. But
he killed it, and you already did your list, so it's business as usual.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for a confirmation. Did we agree to this? I was throwing out suggestions.
You guys are both dumbasses, by the way.
Why?
I tried to tip you both off, and this is just how stupid both of you are. I'm just going to share that with you right now.
He's so aggressive right now.
Yeah, because... Let me explain why, and let me explain to the suspects why. Because I already did my list, but as always, you didn't pay close attention to it until the fact you just saw that it was done. And then you wanted the first thing you wanted to do, Nicholas, was, of course, in true suspects fashion, just come at me because we haven't decided on it yet to try and pull a technicality, to try and get the one up and also make me redo the list. Look at the damn list, you idiots.
What's wrong with it?
Exactly.
Why are you, first of all, why are you being so aggressive? Second of all, I don't read your emails.
Because you guys both fell right in. You fell right into the trap.
I don't read your emails.
And I tried to tip you both off.
Oh, you're saying that you're trying to say that it satisfies all the categories that I sent to you.
Look at my list and then figure out the theme.
I'm not reading your email, Joel.
Okay. When you look at my list,
I mean, I'll read it for you. It's a list of songs. Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock, It Takes Two. Stacey Q, Two of Hearts. Grover Washington and Bill Withers, Just the Two of Us. Do you see a pattern?
Come on, Laminack. Are you picking it up yet? Because I know Nick's not.
You're quitting.
God, no. Every freaking song has a theme, dumbass. I was trying to give you guys
a dumbass. You have called me a dumbass about nine times in this one segment. Now, am I going to have to call you a bitch 50 times to balance this
out?
Well,
you do anyway, and I don't respond. So, come on,
numbers,
Barry.
The number two is a common denominator. Okay,
now you're getting there.
But how does that satisfy the theme is my question.
It doesn't. I was trying to tip you off with everything that had a two in it because of the fact that Lisa was going to two.
Ah.
And I was trying to tip y'all off before. Okay, so it went over
that
like
that was hard for me to kind of figure. I didn't.
I realize that now. I just heard that.
I'm a little slow. I'm like
it.
An old Macintosh from the 80s.
So there you go. All right, Big Mac. We got you. I have not done a list.
Oh, I see it now. I finally opened the email. Yeah, I just saw my list, and I was like, bleep this dude. And then I just moved on. I just was like, all right.
Nick, you know what that's going to be?
I waited until the show started.
Yeah, see? But that's what's going to – I'm going to be the same way. On Sunday morning, on Sunday morning when I look at my email and I go, oh, look, I just saw this. Barry had a chat link set up for me to do something on Saturday night. I don't know why I didn't see this till Sunday. Oh, well. Okay.
I like that. Listen, I know you're hanging that over my head, but you know I know other people beside you, right?
I know. Sure. Oh, by the way, I booked you another one.
Oh, who'd you book me?
I booked you your boy Barry Warner.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's a good one. That's going to be a good
one.
And
he's out.
No, you should totally do it.
Old man out live on YouTube. I will end up cussing him out live on YouTube.
No, you won't. It will be a night. Did Charlie say he's going to do it? Charlie's still in studio.
Besides, I'm only having one old man a month, and I've already had Andy Huggins last night. So it's not – that's enough.
Yeah, but you're about to have Joel, so that's two.
Oh.
Hey. Okay, so I finally watched episode one of
The
Longest
Dance?
The
Last Dance.
The Last Yard, what's it called?
The Last Dance.
Okay. I got to say, first of all, first and foremost, can we talk about his finger? What happened to his index finger on his right hand? It's
you noticed
Booger
it
McFarland
too.
Did.
Yes.
Yes. What is going on with the finger?
Like,
I couldn't watch the thing. I almost just said I can't watch 10 of these because his finger is trying to escape. It's just going in the wrong direction. If he pointed at something, it's pointing 45 degrees the other way, really. It's just a mess on that hand.
I was like, did MJ play football too and we missed it? And he was like Ronnie Lott and just did something that – because I don't remember anybody ever saying anything or any other issues coming up where something with his finger – and then when he did – yeah, there was the one where – He made a point and put his hand up. I'm like, oh, God, what happened?
He just kept talking, and all I could do was stare at his finger. I was like, what is going on there? That was crazy.
Yeah, I did notice that as well.
Nick, did you notice it or no?
Yeah, I did. I did. I didn't expect that. And that's kind of the shocking thing that I think Joel mentioned on the show yesterday is all these specific details that are just being revealed now. Like, I would have never known a lot of these details. And I would have never noticed a lot of these minor things that I guess a lot of people knew about until this documentary. So, yeah, it was definitely noticeable. No question.
Barry?
My second thought.
Hold on. So I just Googled Michael Jordan's finger. It says the six-time NBA champion.
That sounds like a sex move.
Five-time NBA MVP has a pretty
from
funky.
From way downtown. Bang.
It says he has a pretty funky-looking right pointer finger. The gruesome appearance of his finger can be traced back to a mishap with a cigar cutter during the 99 lockout.
What?
A cigar cutter?
And see, that's something I felt like Joel would have been in tuned
with
at that time.
Yeah.
No clue. And so they have a picture of him, his hand real close, and it looks like it's very swollen around the knuckle and had something done. But it doesn't look as bad as it looked in the documentary. He severed the tendons and needed to undergo surgery, but the function of that finger was never the same.
Oh, no. I wonder if it caused his shot to be off. That's why
he
started sucking at the end of his career.
Perhaps that's the reason why with his two seasons with the Wizards, he didn't play quite as good and had some of the worst shooting seasons of his career. Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. We're getting to the bottom of stuff here, fellas.
A lot of these things are so much easier to keep under wraps at that time, with the lack of social media and stuff like that. You can't do that now. It's more difficult.
Picture. I'll retweet the picture, but yeah, it doesn't even – this picture doesn't do justice to what it looked like in the documentary.
So I'm watching it, and then at one point they play a highlight reel of him dunk, like kind of after he started the season and after game 3 in Milwaukee when he took over and you know brought him back, and they were like from that point on it was his team, and then they started showing him with all the dunks in the games, you know, and they were playing Eric B and Rakim's I Ain't No Joke.
Yeah, yep.
And I found myself getting hyped I was like, what? Yeah. Bitch, what? Ooh. Like I was getting hyped. I don't feel like there's that. Now, we can talk about greatest player of all times and this and that. I don't feel like that's a thing anymore. Nobody dunks like that consistently in the NBA. Is that an incorrect statement? Jordan,
no.
Like, if you gave him a breakaway, he was going to put on a show.
Yeah, right.
And he was, you know, when he dunked, he was going to let you know that he could do this. I'm watching that going, man, this is why you love basketball. Look at the beauty of this. Look how, I mean, LeBron is, you know, they showed the block shot at North Carolina where he came from behind, and LeBron has had some of those in the NBA, and we've seen that before. But just the way that they put that montage together of in-game dunks and the spectacular way in which he did it in game. It wasn't just a breakaway and he threw it down once. There were people jumping. There were people in his face. I mean, like, I don't think we see that kind of dynamic play from one player consistently like you.
Well, I'll say this. And he hasn't played that much yet. I think Zion's a guy that every time he gets a chance to dunk, he kind of does want to put on a show. I think you're absolutely onto something because, you know, back when I was, you know, a ball boy and then during that era, anytime anybody had a breakaway, it was showtime. Mm. And yeah. I remember that there were, you know, the dunk that he did in Milwaukee in the second game of the season, it was his first road game, was our home opener. The Bucks ended up winning that game, by the way, by two, but everybody, all they could talk about was MJ. And he had one of those breakaways in that game where he cradled it, double pumped it, and then two-handed it. I remember in the Garden in New York, he had a breakaway and he cupped it and rocked the baby and did that. Yep. And every time you're right. Back then, I mean, you had Dominique. You had guys where if they had a breakaway or they had an opportunity to
dunk, it was legit showtime.
It was big time. Yeah, you're right. A lot of guys now are trying to save energy. It's this whole, you know, load management and all this other BS. Where I think it's a fair point that I think guys don't dunk like they used to dunk.
Nope. And so, there's no, like, you could put together a highlight reel, but it's probably going to take you longer. It's probably few and far between. LeBron has had some spectacular, thunderous dunks, but there was no finesse. There was no beauty to some of these dunks. I mean, even like Harden, as many breakaways as he's had, or Russ, it's all power jams, if you will. It's Jordan. It was a thing of beauty. Like, there was artistry to him dunking, and he did it every chance.
Whether he was by himself,
if you were running down the court with him, he was still going to dunk on you, and it was going to be beautiful.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Is it fair to say Kobe was maybe the last guy that, whether someone was on him or he had a breakaway, he was still going to do something special?
I think
so.
Because even the under the basket stuff, the reverses, and like, we don't see that anymore. Not like that. Not to that level and not that often. They're there.
Yeah.
But they're few and far between.
That's a good point. All right. So with that, we can continue to talk about The Last Dance and a bunch of other things. Something on your mind you want to get off your chest? Why don't you just join the show? 713-780-3776. HRP listener line. Call, text. Hit us on Twitter. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Jump around. Jump around. Jump up and get down.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Half hour into The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5 on a sunshiny day in H-Town. It's Barry, Nick, and myself as we were kicking around The Last Dance now that one of us has at least watched one of the episodes.
Well, you didn't watch all the Tiger King in once like I had asked, so this is fair.
But I watched more than half the first time.
There was only two episodes, Joel. There was only
but
two
that's,
episodes.
So you haven't even come up to watching at least half, more than half.
What do you?
All right. What other takeaways you got? Well, that's why you're the numbers.
Somebody, Well, somebody texted the show and said, why is Jordan's eyes so bloodshot now? And that's the other thing I noticed. Why
that is
are
a
they
big
so
topic of conversation. Now, my question on that, too, is when – since he sat on this for 20-some-odd years, when did he do his sit-down? Because the interview he did with Robin Roberts last week, his eyes weren't like that, and he looked like he was – you know, I don't want to say he hadn't been taking care of himself, but look – Michael's always been a guy that has burnt it at both ends. I mean, there's still the unconfirmed rumors that in the historic game against the Jazz where he ended up making the big shot and could barely stand up throughout the game, and Pippen and all those guys were helping him throughout. A lot of people said it was the flu. Other people said he was hungover. So he was a guy that was – I've told you guys this story off the air before, but I will say that when – as much as I can say, when the Rockets played him and they had Charles, Charles would do his damnedest to do whatever it took to beat Michael and the Bulls. If it meant taking him out the night before and trying to get him a lot of cigars and a lot of beverages, he was all for it. And I've said this to you guys on numerous occasions. The one time that Charles really thought he got him the night before, he scored 40-some-odd points in a game that started at, like, noon on a Sunday. And I walked in the locker room after the game, and I'm like, where's the fat man? And they're like, he's in the steam room. And I walked in, and I go, you okay, bro? And Charles has got his head in his hands. He goes, white boy, that man over there ain't human. Ain't no way we supposed to consume 7 martinis and 4 cigars and still drop 40. I was like, dude, he's something else. But, yeah, I mean, he just – He's a very, very unique and special individual. But that's my question is, because they said that a lot of people on social media were wondering, does he have liver issues? You know, why else would his eyes look like that? So my question is, like, when did they take that interview, get those interviews with him? Because he looks better now than he definitely did during those interviews.
Yeah, indeed. But I did notice, I was like, damn, is it a health issue? Is he baked? Is it just, you know, because sometimes I did a video and somebody was like, man, you look stoned. And I was like, nah, I wasn't. It was just, I guess I hadn't had enough sleep and my eyes were all red and I should have put some Visine before I shot the video. But so that's the only, I just noticed it. I'm not suggesting, you know, anything. Because look, Jordan doesn't do that. It was in the documentary. He doesn't do drugs like that. He may drink. Right. He may, you know, he smokes cigars.
No, he's
not,
big
he
on,
wasn't
yeah,
high.
Exactly right.
So, he, yeah. So, That was my thing. Now the other takeaway for me was what you brought up yesterday with the whole crumbs and the Jerry Krause, Phil Jackson
thing. Yep.
I found that to be very interesting. I knew some of that, but I didn't know a lot of it. And when you saw Phil created that you know, playbook or whatever for everybody, and it had the Last Dance, and he was basically telling everybody this is it. I thought what a risky way to approach a season, because it could backfire, but it could motivate them like no other way of motivating somebody. And I think he's fortunate that he had guys like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman on that team, because that's what it did, is it motivated them to go out and win another one. Not that Jordan really needed it, but it was one of those things where they all knew, okay, let's be hyper-focused. But I thought that was kind of risky, but also smart on Phil's part to do that.
Yeah, and that was, you know, Phil's always with the Zen, and you talk to anybody, and I'm working on Bill Wennington, who I know from that team, that to try and join us at some point. But those guys will tell you, guys that have been on Phil Jackson teams will say that, you know, we talked about how Van Gundy used the media to try and get his players to, like, understand messages he was trying to send. Well, Phil was a guy that would just, without saying a word, would drop a certain book in your locker or, you know, send you something that was a Zen-related quote or something like that, because he's just deep in thought kind of guy like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it goes back to what you and I were talking about yesterday, and Nick, obviously, chime in on all of this, but my big thing is Jerry Krause, like I said, he's in the Hall of Fame. He's a genius in a lot of the moves he made, but the biggest thing he did was, and I guess he had the owner's blessing, he pulled the plug and killed a dynasty that, for all we know, could have had a few more years in it. And I know that, you know, I get that these teams are hyper-focused on, like, when is the right time to rebuild, to hit the reset. Well, to me, when you have that much talent and you have such an iconic player like Jordan, and you want to start over before it's even over, that's on you. And that's a huge mistake, because I just, you know, Krause kept saying he wanted everybody to realize this wasn't a team that was great because of Michael Jordan. It was a team because of the way it was constructed. He's full of crap, too. That team was all about Michael Jordan and the other pieces.
Yeah, what I was thinking as I'm watching that and then remembering what you had told me about it yesterday, my first thought was, is this ego, or, and you know me, I'm always thinking of different things or conspiracies or whatever, or various reasons outside of the box of what we get presented with. But I wonder if there was anything to, maybe he knew that Jordan wanted to leave, or Jordan was on the way out, or that, you know, Scotty, or that there was something going on that he knew. Maybe he found out, maybe Jordan didn't tell him directly, but he was like, okay, fine, you don't want to be here anymore. You know, so I just thought, is there other motivation other than just
Krause's ego and the fact that this had nothing to do with MJ, although he didn't want to give MJ the credit that everybody else was. But I found this article that Tim Floyd, the heir apparent to Phil Jackson, inevitably, did an interview in Baton Rouge yesterday and said that they wanted him to be the coach after the 95-96 season. So you would have taken two championships away from the Bulls. Mm-hmm. And that Krause was dead set on it and said he couldn't work with Phil anymore. He didn't even want to see him. And Floyd, though he was flattered, even took Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, aside and said, I think you're making a huge mistake. And really to his own detriment, because they wanted him to be the coach. He said, if I'm you, I don't do this. I let this thing die a natural death. Because there's certain teams and certain players you don't break up. And I think these guys have earned the right to let it die on its own. And he said, literally, it's like the Beatles. And I could not have agreed more. And I'm thinking, man, that's a tough deal. Because if they come at you and say, hey, I'm going to hand you the keys to all of this. But he even said, I told Jerry Krause, and I don't know if it was in episode one or two, so I don't know if you saw it or not. Because they even talk about Krause got married. He invited every team member, every coach except for Phil. And he invited Tim Floyd. So Tim Floyd even called Jerry Krause and said, Jerry, seriously, just you work out of the downtown office. Let Phil work out of the Berto Center. You guys don't have to see each other. You still make the moves. But don't do this, because it's too good to break up. And Krause was hell-bent on breaking it up. And that's where I think, for all of his genius and a lot of the trades he made, including the Pippen deal and some of the other moves to bring in guys, that was asinine.
Yeah, that seems beyond stupid. I guess it was ego. I mean, I guess there's no other. It was him and Phil not getting along. And I think there was a quick little clip where Phil said, you know, coaches' salaries went like this, and GM salaries went like that, and there was a pretty big gap between the two. And with his hands as an example, and to me, that might have been the telling part about the whole relationship, because, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf came out and said, look, you won't find a sweeter, nicer guy than Krause. That, you know, he's just a great guy. He's just, you know, kind of a vulnerable dude because of the way he grew up, and he's too trusting and this and that. So if that's the kind of person he is, and there's no reason not to believe Reinsdorf when he says that about Krause, then you know, maybe it was just ego on his part, because he felt like, I made you, Phil. You were an assistant coach with nothing, and you're not, you know, I'm not getting my due, or you're not giving me the due, or whatever. And it's a shame, but yeah, I was trying to, you know, figure what could this have been, but you know, it just, based on all that, it just sounds like it was just his ego.
I mean, you know, they call it small man syndrome, but you're right. Look, I think you're absolutely onto something. I mean, there are people that just have to have all the credit or a lot, you know, or get what they feel is their due in every situation. And when you go back as far and you make the right call, it's not just that he gave Phil the reins to coach the coach the team initially. He hired him from the CBA to be an assistant. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the undertone of the whole thing is, you owe me, bro. I not only rescued you from the CBA and gave you this opportunity to be in the NBA, but I gave you the keys to MJ and what ends up being six titles. You need to thank me, not crap on me, but he was blatantly underpaid.
Yeah.
You're talking about Phil?
Krause.
Oh, Krause.
Oh, yeah. Phil was underpaid, and the way Krause treated him was not right.
No, I agree with you, but I think it goes to show that when you're working with somebody on a daily basis, it's easy for you sometimes to kind of forget what the main goal is, because you're dealing with whatever it is that's bothering you about that person on a daily basis. So despite the fact that he had an unbelievable team and an unbelievable roster with Michael Jordan on it with this Bulls team, he was just so sick and tired of Phil Jackson. And I totally agree with you, Joel. I feel like he did feel a little bit underappreciated. You had an opportunity to play with the best player to ever touch a basketball, an opportunity to coach the best player to ever touch a basketball, and it's just easier to coach someone like that. Let's be real. Even when there's a personality that might be a little aggressive, it's still easier to coach somebody who's just naturally talented and naturally has the skills. And I think Phil Jackson should admit that to a certain extent, for sure.
Well, you're right, and it's twofold, because on the Krause standpoint, there's a reason why he made statements like, you know, organizations win championships, not players. I mean, that's the dumbest quote he ever could have made, because no organization, no matter what team you put together, puts the ball in the basket, right? And from a Phil Jackson standpoint, the biggest thing that Red Auerbach had a problem with when Phil was getting close to breaking his record was, Red was one organization the entire time. He made the moves. He coached the team. And he didn't go and pick and choose from free agency. Phil got picked for the Bulls and had Scottie and Michael. Then Phil picked the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq. And really kind of got to pick his spots with two superstars in place in every situation, to where Red thought that he got off easy compared to what Red had to do to win titles. And so I think that's something that isn't talked about enough.
Yeah,
I agree.
Makes sense.
I agree totally. So,
all right. So we'll continue to roll on. We got a little bit there in the documentary, and if you guys have comments that you haven't gotten off your mind yet, or you want to share with us, give them to us. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can do it through calls and text to the HRNP listener line 713-780-3776. And we got plenty more to get to. It's a Tuesday. It's the usual suspects. It's ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. First hour of the show continues. It's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. We covered a lot of The Last Dance yesterday, and now catching up with Nicholas and getting a few more points in now that Barry's had a chance to see some of it. Obviously, there will be more discussions to come. Between Bill O'Brien and The Last Dance, we have solved sports radio during a pandemic.
Pretty much.
So, with that being said, Mr. O'Brien, in the crossfires of another story, because now Sports Illustrated's new cover story is DeAndre Hopkins. And for as much as he's taken the high road and avoided any and all reactions and commentary to his time with the Texans and Bill O'Brien, it seems like, not that the gloves are completely off, but there were some pretty telling quotes in this article, was there not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not completely surprising, but, you know, he's been kind of quiet, D-Hop has. He did come out and not necessarily defend Bill O'Brien when, who was it that said about the Aaron Hernandez thing? That was
Michael Irvin on ESPN, yeah.
Yeah, and so you recall that when he said those things that he had heard that there was a meeting in which Bill O'Brien, accused or compared DeAndre Hopkins and his antics to Aaron Hernandez. And D-Hop came out on his Instagram or Twitter and said, y'all are blowing this out of proportion. But some of the stuff that he said in the article and you know, in subsequent discussions is pretty telling. He said, one of the quotes said that Hopkins knew that asking for a little raise would lead to the outcome that I got, which is the outcome that I wanted.
Yep.
That's a bombshell to me. That's a bombshell that DeAndre Hopkins didn't want to be a Houston Texan. You have to evaluate why. You know he loved playing with Deshaun Watson. You know that he probably enjoyed the city. I mean, most
well, he said it
being here.
If you read the article, he said, look, this has absolutely nothing to do with the city of Houston. It's my adopted home. It's been my home since they drafted me out of college, and I love it. So that was very clear-cut, and I think he had to do that.
He suspected O'Brien had been shopping him for an entire year
before finally trading him to the Cardinals. That's super telling.
Uh-huh.
Because sometimes you have these relationships with people at work, and you kind of there's no reason why you don't necessarily like that person or don't really communicate a lot with them. You kind of walk past them in the halls and don't really say anything. And I feel like there was a lot of there was a big unspoken nature to the relationship that Hopkins had with Bill O'Brien. And so he perhaps wasn't told by Bill O'Brien that he was being shot, but he just could tell from Bill O'Brien's mannerisms and the way he was moving that he was potentially shopping him for over a year. And I think you can tell when you've been working in the same building with some of the same people for months on end, even seasons or years on end. And I think there was an unspoken vibe that both of them understood while they were together, because for whatever reason, their relationship never really grew from the way Hopkins is talking.
It said Hopkins was likely confident that seeking a new deal would nudge things in the right direction for him. Meaning he wanted out.
He also made reference to what Nick's talking about and said, we never had a relationship in the entire time that I was there. Which is on both parties, right? And if you're the head coach, it behooves you to be the one to nurture relationships with your players. And we've talked about this even with a guy as hard-assed as Jeff Van Gundy was. He knew T-Mac was his franchise here along with Yao. And so he, for the first time in his career, really catered to a superstar, because that's what you have to do sometimes, because, again, otherwise you become the laughing stock of the league when you take a guy in his prime that's one of the best players in the game and you trade him for personal differences. Because the other thing that stood out to me, if you guys caught it or not, there were twice in the article when he referred to his new team, but he spelled it T-E-A-M both times as if a slap in the face to O'Brien's comments after the trade.
Mm.
So there is a lot, obviously, of bitterness, and I think this is all on Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, the last quote that I thought was interesting, and it goes to what Nick was saying, is this is a direct quote. There was no relationship, Hopkins said. Make sure you put that in there. There's not a lot to speak about. I mean, that's pretty damning. You can be a head coach and not like a guy. You can be a GM and not like a guy. But to be who DeAndre Hopkins is, and for you not to even try to establish a relationship with him, for you not to even try to make it work, or the way you approach it is you sit him down and compare him to Aaron Hernandez. That speaks volumes about the kind of person. Yeah, that speaks volumes about the kind of person that Bill O'Brien is.
Volumes. As we talk about on this show, we flip each other crap all the time, and we talk about a lot of things. But family's off limits, and you know, just like we say on Twitter, you know, your wife and your kids and whatever, that's off limits. The fact that Bill O'Brien, on top of everything that you said about everything else with the Aaron Hernandez, when you make it that personal about the mothers of his children and call that into question, I think that's a line that once crossed, you don't go back from.
At the end of the day, it was a guy that Bill O'Brien didn't draft. You know what I mean? He was there. Bill O'Brien was there a year after DeAndre Hopkins was drafted, and he probably didn't have that relationship because it wasn't a guy that had, you know, he had his fingerprint on. And I think that makes a big difference for someone like Bill O'Brien. If he comes on the team as a head coach and you are already drafted or put on this roster by somebody else, some other higher up – That's not a good start if your new boss is Bill O'Brien. And that's just my personal belief. And I think there's no way. I mean, you saw what happened with Deshaun Watson and how for a long time it was an ego thing. And or a lot of people felt that way, that Tom Savage shouldn't have been playing as many games as he should have before they started Deshaun Watson. And I think that's a big thing with Bill O'Brien. If he doesn't have his name on it, and that's kind of a natural thing for anybody, especially when they get a new gig, it's not that your days are numbered, but you would think that someone like DeAndre Hopkins would allow him to have the longevity, and despite the fact that the power that was being endorsed by the McNair family for Bill O'Brien, that it still wouldn't matter because DeAndre Hopkins is that good. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Well, and that's crazy.
But here's the thing, and we get back to the whole Belichick Patriots way comparison, and look, he even referenced that by saying, look, if you remember how the Patriots always did it, they never had a big star receiver. So maybe that's the blueprint he's following. But the thing that we can, you know, always say is Belichick is an a-hole, but he's earned that right to be one because of all the titles and the Super Bowls and all the things he's done to create a dynasty. And Bill wants you to bow down and kiss the ring from day one. And there's a lot of guys going, for what? And then if they're not treated
AFC
right,
South champ, Joel. AFC South champion. Print that, John.
I guess, man. I think that more and more, it's just with every passing story. And the fact that, again, we were right all along about Michael Irvin. And the fact that there's a reason why, even though D-Hop didn't say anything, he didn't downplay Michael Irvin because he let Michael Irvin do the dirty work for him, and then he stayed clear of it. But it's just another way Bill should be held personally responsible for so many bad moves by this team.
Yeah. It's a sad, sad state of affairs over there on Kirby. Really bad. Yeah. And I'm happy for DeAndre Hopkins that he got out from under Bill O'Brien. I really am. I'm happy as a fan that I got out from
under Bill O'Brien. It's getting to that point. It's getting to that point where you're going to be happy for any player that's not playing for Bill O'Brien. Honestly, like Deshaun Watson, if he ever makes that decision to leave, I'm going to be so hurt. But at the same time, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah, but guys,
from under a piece of crap coach.
You're right. Yep. But here's the other thing, too. We always say in college, the coach wins out over players because he has all the power. But we always say in the NBA, players are making more than coaches. So if it's between a player and a coach, who's got to go? In the Harden-McHale thing, McHale had to go. How in the world is Bill O'Brien surviving and D-Hop being traded when your franchise is so much better when you have D-Hop at receiver?
That's the million-dollar question.
Man. Yeah, for sure it is. All right, we'll continue to roll. Just changing gears a little bit. Got some football on the agenda, and hour one is already behind us. Rolling through a Tuesday on the usual suspects. Hour two comes up next, ESPN 97.5.